Welcome to another episode of The Athletic Soccer Show. My name is Jeff Reuter, and today I am joined by a very special guest that you probably know under a different name, but we'll call him by his birth name anyway. He is, of course, a very notable, prominent figure in the soccer community who does not play the game, does not non-fictionally coach the game anyway, but nevertheless is probably one of the most recognizable faces in the sport in the country at this point. He's an Arsenal fan. He's an all-around good dude. We've got Brendan Hunt from Ted Lasso here. Thank you very much for your time. How's everything today?
It's going all right, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm excited. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, you've been on this huge press junket. You've been doing some great work, some great interviews with some of our writers and many others talking about season 3 of Ted Lasso, which has come out now. But I think overall first, you know, you're getting a lot of questions about your Arsenal fandom, about your feelings about the English pyramid, of course. How would AFC Richmond fare in the first division, the second division, whatever? But how would you describe your kind of feelings about soccer in the United States as a whole? Do you have a team that you gravitate towards? Do you follow the domestic leagues too much?
Yeah, so in terms of me and domestic soccer, when I was a kid, the Chicago Sting existed in the NASL, and no one ever once in my entire life said, hey, let's go to a Sting game. but I still love the uniforms, and I have, you know, I have my retro shirt. And then obviously that all went away, and then the Chicago Fire started in my last year in Chicago before I moved to Amsterdam. And I never went to one of their games either. And they won the title in their first year. Right. But, you know, but I was aware of the name Bob Bradley, and I was aware of the name DeMarcus Beasley. And also I was aware that they had the best kits, maybe in all of professional sports. Those first Fire kits were amazing. And why anyone would ever want to rebrand that, I just don't understand anything.
That's why the kids call stuff Fire, by the way. They're actually just referring to the inaugural Chicago Fire kits. That's where it comes from.
They mean fire level quality.
Exactly, 1998.
Such good kits. What a fucking great crest. Anywho, when I came back from Amsterdam, LA Galaxy were, you know, well underway, and I went to a few of those games. And when that was the closest club, like, you didn't think twice about the fact that it's actually super far from from where I was living. but I would go to a few games here and there, and I even had, you know, I think I was able to afford half season tickets one year. You know, definitely enjoyed, you know, seeing, you know, a few games of Beckham, and you know, a little more Lando, and a lot more Robbie Keane, who love. But when LAFC happened, it's like, oh well, it's right there. They're right there. and Will Ferrell's there. Well, Will Ferrell's there. It was like, fuck it. I think I got to go to these. I got to at least go check it out. And like, the atmosphere was on point. The stadium is better, you know. I bet LA Galaxy is going to, you know, when the neighbors get noisy, you have to like adjust. And at some point, LA Galaxy is going to have a new stadium and some new stuff. But at the moment, LAFC is just a better experience and everything. But I think, you know, LAFC is now my one team I support. Because here's the thing, like, growing up in Chicago, I can't support the Dodgers. I can't support the Lakers or the Rams. No. But since my childhood team that I never went to a game of doesn't exist, and Chicago Fire has already, you know, trod upon what few memories I have of them with this ridiculous rebrand. Oh, God, just put a Cubs logo on there if that's what you're going to do.
And, might as well. Yeah, might as well.
I wish them the best. I want to have my one local team that I support. I mean, this is home. I do live here. And I'd be a real dick if every single team that played in here was like, no, I'm not from here. No,
right.
Give me one. So, yeah.
But isn't that so interesting though? Yeah. I mean, like, how, you know, in the United States with leagues coming and going over the decades and teams coming and going within those leagues every single year, you know, just, it feels like there isn't that same sort of like, you know, I grew up in this town. This town is older than my grandparents. I have to follow this club. I don't really have a choice. And if I don't, I'm going to be shunned by the rest of my friends, right? You know, there really isn't that same sort of feel just yet, that sort of hyper local feel, I guess, especially once you get outside of these markets that have MLS, USL, and WSL teams. You know, how is that feeling, you know, just being able to feel closer connected to a team in LA than, you know, the team in Chicago, rebrand and all?
I mean, I don't know. I think that that's definitely relative to where you're from and how old you are, you know? I think a 15-year-old in Portland probably feels like the Timbers have been around for as long as Manchester United, you know? And you know, you never remember that, you know, the moment you became a fan of something, there was something before that. And you could have just missed it. You know, like I became an Arsenal fan in 99. And that's when, you know, Man U were marauding toward the treble. So it really felt like, oh, that Man U, no one can beat them. Little did I know. No, Arsenal had just won the double the year before. Like, I didn't know that. You never know the history of right before. It just feels like the moment that you walked in has been the moment forever. So if you are a 9-year-old right now, waking up in St. Louis going, you know, I like soccer. Do we have a soccer team? Yes. St. Louis United forever! You know, like there's no way, you can't comprehend that it wasn't there 2 months ago. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Also, are they called St. Louis United or St. Louis City? Or
City. But I like the idea that someday there will be a St. Louis United and they'll have a big, oh, maybe someday it'll be big enough.
Oh, the St. Louis Derby! Oh.
Can you imagine? Yeah, you have the like fried... what are those called? The fried like cheese bites. What do they have? It's not ravioli. The fried ravioli. Yeah, you'll have the fried ravioli section on one side, the barbecue section on the other side, and they just, you know, that's how you choose.
This is a plank you're walking down. I wish you well.
Yeah, it's not a bad plank. If it's just the Mississippi River, I think I can maybe handle that or find a raft or something. I think overall, I mean, There have been clips, obviously, of the cast at the White House recently, and there have been a tremendous amount of appearances both in soccer and in just greater society since the show has taken off. How do you feel about the role that Ted Lasso, the show, has had on soccer fandom, the way that casual sports fans, or not even sports fans at all, kind of perceive soccer to be in the United States?
I hope it never gets overstated, because it would, I don't want it to be, you know, thought or even implied that, like, wow, no one in America liked soccer before Ted Lasso, because that is, of course, not true. You know, we've had a beating drum of fandom going back decades. It just has not been able to compete with the amount of people who are liking other things. So we didn't get people into it, but we are getting it into more people's TVs. You know, people who are like, I'm never going to watch a soccer game. Well, okay, I watched this show, and now, haha, we tricked you. Soccer is on your TV. And we made you care about a team. We've shown you that it's possible to care about a team. And once that switch is flipped, oh, switch is slipped?
I liked once it.
Once that switch is flipped, maybe there's no turning back. If anything, you know, maybe we've got the people who were like, you know, on the fence. Maybe just, you know, got some people who are on the fence, and we push them over to the correct side or pull them over to the right side. But the way that U.S. soccer and MLS have, you know, responded to us, reached out to us, it sure feels like they know something we don't, because they are very happy we're around. And I'm not going to poke around too much and ask exactly how or why that is. but if we are helping in some way, then I'm glad for that.
There's an interesting kind of dialogue going on. I don't know if you followed it, among especially American coaches in Major League Soccer and how they feel they're being perceived. You have one side that's saying, you know, it's a fictional TV show, which it is, you know, to go to your point of not trying to overstate it necessarily, and saying, I don't think anyone would look and say this character who is supposed to be a college football coach now coaching soccer doesn't run remotely parallel to what our job is. There's another side that says that because that is essentially the most prominent American soccer coach to a lot of people who don't follow the sport, that it changes the way that they perceive the role or an American in the role. And of course, you have Jesse Marsh and Bob Bradley with relatively short stints in the Premier League as well. How do you feel about that whole thing? I mean, first of all, the fact that your show can start that among people who do this for a living, but second, just that whole kind of perception of Americans coaching.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if there is a stereotype against American coaches that exists, you know, in the halls of various European boardrooms, it's not because of Ted Lasso, guys. it started a long ass time ago, and it's because of Jerry Springer as much as it is of anything else. You know, we are not the first bit of American culture they have ever seen. And we are not the first Americans they've ever had conversations with. And they've talked to so many Americans who've come to visit them, who want to take pictures at their various tourist sites, who don't know, you know, who we know anything about soccer at all, and who keep calling it soccer, and wouldn't know, you know, Diego Maradona from Lothar Matthäus. This is the stuff that American coaches have against them, and players too, really. So I definitely lean on the side of, yeah, it's we are not showing an American soccer coach who is a bumbling American soccer coach. That is not the case. We are showing a charming, naive American. We are playing upon the stereotypes that already existed, and in which there's a modicum, you know, in which there's a, you know, a yeah, modicum of truth. Yeah, I can't say that we're doing so much harm, particularly. And also, like, Bob Bradley pre-existed the show, and then Jesse Marsh got hired after the show had been on for two seasons. So. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure we're the ones who are causing any problems right now. And most importantly, we root so hard for every American coach. You know, our man at Stuttgart, is he still there? Is he still there? What's his name?
I believe so. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
He's got the super Italian sounding name.
Yeah. It's one of those beautiful names that you just don't want to get wrong because you're going to accidentally call him a Mashugana or something.
Yeah. So
give me a second here.
Like, keep an eye on him, you know, keep rooting for David Wagner, even if he's only, you know, American with an asterisk. like we went to, you know, Jason and I got invited by Virgil van Dijk to go to Liverpool for a game, and it happened to be a game against Leeds. Leeds scored in the first minute and the 92nd minute, you know, or so ish, to win that game. So we were bad luck for Liverpool. That was Virgil van Dijk's first ever home loss at Anfield, I believe. Maybe
That's
his
right.
first home
yeah.
league loss. So the track record shows we are good for Americans based on that alone.
I think that that checks out. And the name we were looking for, by the way, Pellegrino Matarazzo.
Pellegrino Matarazzo. I mean, just gosh. Oh, boy. Sometimes you just really appreciate America.
when you think of American soccer, you often think of men named Pellegrino Matarazzo running around.
We have a guy named David Wagner who's actually German and a guy named Pellegrino Matarazzo who's actually American. All right.
Great. Figure that one out.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, when we do talk about American coaches, we also talk about Greg Berhalter these days a lot. You know, there's been a lot going on for the United States men's national team over the last year. Of course, there's the World Cup showing, losing to a team in orange like you're donning in the round of 16. And then also, of course, all of this aftermath that has happened with the program in terms of, you know, potential coaching change, but also some family drama that has seeped into the program. You also have another World Cup coming up with the women's side, you know, who's going to be one of the front runners to win in Australia and New Zealand this summer. How do the national team sit with you? Are those programs that you follow closely?
To different degrees. I follow the men's team more closely than the women's team for at least two reasons and maybe a third. First one being they haven't won the thing yet, you know? And so, like, when they haven't won the thing, you yearn for that so much, you know?
Yeah.
And their matches, therefore, in like, you know, qualification for things tend to be more competitive and, you know, more like, can we do this? The women's side are so good that, you know, getting there is rarely the issue. It's just, you know, the actual Olympics or World Cups themselves. So that's one reason. Another reason is I've just been like cognizant of the men's team for longer because of, you know, the sort of fraction of time that I gave the 94 World Cup when I didn't quite understand what's happening, but I got that it was important. And then by 99 or 2000 in Amsterdam, I met John O'Brien, who played for Ajax, but was a stalwart of the men's national team. So then that made the men's national team like personal, you know?
Yeah.
So there's definitely those two sort of more concrete reasons. The third is probably that I am at heart a sexist, and I have to try to improve as a person because I naturally make time for the men's team, and I have to like decide to make time for the women's team, and that is a flaw in my character, but I just want to be honest. So, but the Women's World Cup's coming up. I can't wait. Let's fucking do it. You know?
Yeah.
It's going to be great. I can't believe they're playing in New Zealand so much instead of Australia.
Yeah. Australia. Yeah.
Anyhow. So
a lot of land that Peter Jackson has ceded over the last 20 years that just needed stadiums built or something. Who knows?
Yeah. I've only been to two women's team games. One was a game in LA, where they played Belgium. That was when, Natalie Portman and Jennifer Garner and Kerry Washington. And then the fourth person, had their first like sort of equal pay demonstration. And then it was at Wembley last year when they played England, which was just a massive and awesome, awesome event. So I'm my getting behind of the women team is, like it was only increasing with the years, and like I still haven't ruled out going to New Zealand this year.
Yeah.
If I can, having been to a couple men's World Cups, I definitely want to get to a women's one at some point. But yeah, I'm into the men's team on a more granular level, but I'm behind the women's team too.
I think that there's something interesting with the show as well, because there is still that, for the fact it is a men's football club, there is still that, focus on women involved with the club, and that sort of, deference to ensure that, the idea that the owner, who kind of realizes, hey, this is actually something beautiful that's working on, is a woman, that you have, other people at the club who are, operating in key roles and not just kind of love interests who come and go whenever the plot lines are, kind of dry in other areas of the script. Is that something where, that sort of kind of merge of the two, just the sense that like treating them like two different entities, like there is women's soccer, men's soccer, like is that something where it's helpful just to be able to grasp and say like, okay, you're kind of watching, different World Cups, different events, what have you, or is there something where it helps kind of foster that sort of, what you're calling sexism, and I think it is a fair term for it too, where it's that sort of bias of like, I cover Major League Soccer as my predominant beat, so I am much more inclined to spend a weekend watching Major League Soccer than I'm watching the NWSL, all of their games, despite having far fewer teams. Is there something where it kind of separates a bit? I know that this is way in the weeds suddenly, but it's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, why did I start supporting the men's national team? It's like, well, it's my national team. And they're like, oh, well, the women have a team too. Well, shit, I'm supporting them. And the women's game has been growing on the club level in England a little bit too, so like becoming more aware of like, oh, Arsenal has a women's team too. Well, if it's Arsenal, I'm into it.
Right. Champions League qualifiers pretty much every year.
Yeah. And they're in a quarterfinal right now. They're down 1-0 against Bayern.
That's right.
Full disclosure, I've not yet been to an Arsenal women's game because they had the derby when I was out of town. That derby that drew I think they sold out the derby.
That's right. Yeah.
And they won 4-0, I think.
Pretty good team.
So on the one hand, it's like if we don't separate it, I don't quite know how to explain that, but like if you don't separate it, it's like US soccer. Like, okay, then yeah, that's easy. Arsenal. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm behind it. And in terms of MLS and NWSL, it's a great question because like, had they adopted the wrong model by trying to be their own teams, if what appears to be working is having, a women's Barcelona team, it just plays in the same stadium, at least when they sell enough tickets to,
Right.
Because like, I'm a season ticket holder at LAFC. I bought season tickets for Angel City as soon as they became available. And then I was in London for the entire first season and didn't go to a single game.
Ain't that the way? Yeah.
But I'll get there this year. And but the fact that they play at the same stadium makes them feel linked, and that made me more inclined to do it. So yeah, I don't know if in the long run if the separation will help, or if it'll be, you know, if it's more of a like a we stood on our own ground, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can see both sides, right? You can see where there's a benefit to having like a clear, like you were following this league, these players, whatever. And sometimes there is a benefit to having that sort of connective tissue, and not every club has it. But, you know, I think it's something that inevitably is going to evolve over the next decade, you know, especially in the States. I think overall, I mean, Apple property, Ted Lasso, of course, they are investing significantly in other soccer coverage, you know, and other soccer content that they have. There's a fantastic documentary that I watched recently. I recommend for anyone about the Super League and its very, very quick rise and fall over 3 days. Really well-paced documentary. There's like a perfect Talking Heads needle drop halfway through one of the episodes. So that alone is pretty much safe territory to watch. But also Major League Soccer, of course, is now showing live games and having its own, you know, produced content within it. You know, I guess in your experience with Apple, like, is that something that you see as kind of the future, as, you know, TV packages? You created commercials for NBC's coverage a decade ago, and now of Ted Lasso, obviously, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with those original Tottenham Hotspurs advertisements. And now you're fast forwarding a decade, and here we are with Apple bringing domestic soccer onto its platform. I mean, it's just kind of an interesting trend as we get into the streaming age a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that's, you know, out of my area of expertise a little bit, but I think, you know, like, yes, it's all Apple TV Plus, but, you know, I'm not going to run into you know, Josh Wolf at the water cooler, sure. Percent, you know, but I think it's good for the sport when you know where you can find the games that you want to watch. And when you, if you have a moment of curiosity after you've watched your, you know, after you've watched your Colorado Rapids game, it's like, oh, well, is Portland playing Seattle next? I mean, okay, I'll check it out. You know, you might not do it if you have to sift through a whole bunch of, you know, DirecTV channels, but if you just have to click over on the one app, then you're getting into it more. And you know, clearly the production value on their studio stuff is well beyond anything MLS has ever done. So that makes it look professional. Certainly, you know, all the clubs have such international rosters that, you know, for all these players, you know, they can now be watched easily in their home countries. It all adds up to being good, but the main thing that's good is that it's a 10-year deal. You know, like, this is a long haul investment for Apple, and I think that's the right way to do it, I guess.
Let's focus on the other content while you're here on Apple's platform, which is of course Ted Lasso season 3 now is available on Apple TV. For fans who haven't binged it yet or haven't watched it yet, haven't really caught up and gotten a sense of it, is there anything that you're particularly excited about, whether it's something funny, something powerful, whatever the case is, that they can look forward to in this season?
Like specifically football related or?
Oh, just in general. Something that you really enjoyed about season 3.
Yeah, I can't say too much, but on the football tip, you know, we just had episode 2 come out, and we've introduced a character named Zava. I think everyone will enjoy Zava, but football fans especially will enjoy Zava. Also, without saying which ones they are, we take long visits to at least 3 more stadiums that that we have not yet seen before on the show, and then we have quicker hits at you know, I think 3 more of that. So like, there's more football in this season than we've ever had in any season. So if you like somewhat subpar football action, then have we got the show for you.
How did Man City get to the top of the pile, by the way? I'd always kind of wondered that. How did they get to be the Jamie Tartt club in season 1 over Arsenal, close to your heart, Tottenham with the show's history, just any other club? How did you land on City?
They said yes.
Sure. Okay, that works.
You know, as this fledgling show on a fledgling network, it was a hard sell for clubs to say to, and like we, or say yes to, and like we could only incorporate so many teams before we had to have the involvement of the Premier League, and the Premier League was not going to give us that involvement, so we could do like two or three clubs individually. And Crystal Palace is always going to be one.
Yep.
And we wanted at least one big club, and yeah, Man City was the quickest yes. So you know, we've been able to make them the white whale 3 years running.
It worked out really well. To be fair, I think just like for people, fans of the sport, I think that they see that as very realistic. You know, that sort of loan down, it's something that they do a lot, an awful lot. Brendan, thank you so much for hopping on this show.
Thanks, man. Pleasure.